Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Sorry about that. Jays, very, very busy. Split a doubleheader yesterday, around 7 hits and 16 total bases and 5 RBI from Vlad, as well as a pair of trades, one happening during the first game, one happening between games. Make it 5 trades total, 5 players outbound, 11 prospects inbound. Let's take a little reset. Let's see how Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet is feeling about it. Arden, how you doing, man?
Good. What's going on, Blake?
Not much, man. Busy couple days. Quiet show so far, as we expect in this time slot. Big picture, where are you at on the work the Jays have done over the last week or so to kind of, you know, make chicken salad out of this 2024 season, turn into being sellers a little bit, and yeah, get a little prospect capital in the door?
I don't think that's how that expression goes.
I know. I'm trying to PG it up, man.
You know, they have executed a pretty good sell-off so far, honestly. I mean, there's some good conditions for them to be sellers in this market when you think about just the lack of other sellers and the amount of teams that are facing financial constraints and the way that it almost seems like rentals have a bit more value right now than players with term and a lot of money, which I know sounds kind of backwards, but it's kind of playing out that way. So the conditions have been good for the Blue Jays, but you can never lose sight of the fact that they never wanted to be sellers. They never wanted to be in this position. They came into the season from day one of spring training talking about winning, about going to the postseason, about winning around, getting deeper into the playoffs, and about how much talent was on this roster. So it's a completely failed season, but as you said, they are making some chicken salad of it.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the talking point today for me, the headline item. You didn't want to be here, but you got to make the best of where you are. We have to evaluate the trade deadline they're having, not the one we wanted them to be having. So when you look at it from that sense, you know, what they've been able to get back, a pretty decent mix of what level guys are at, you know, upside versus floor plays, maybe a little heavy on the position player side. What do you like about the kind of return package, and especially if, you know, if there are any guys in that group you think are proximal enough to the majors to make an impact when we look ahead to 2025 here?
Yeah, obviously, you know, Bloss and Class A are the two that stand out as the most potentially high-impact guys. Cutter Coffey is really interesting from a power potential and a bit of, like, just untapped potential. Let's use that word again, in that bat. Like, it just seems like maybe with the change of scenery and some new ideas developmentally, like, there's a lot more to tap into there. I think one of the interesting through lines in pretty much all of the position players that they've acquired is that they've gone for the high on base, manages the strike zone well, power potential perhaps just not fulfilled type of guy, and that speaks to the type of player that the Blue Jays like. They like players that have an approach, that make good swing decisions, that manage the strike zone well. They believe that they can help players add some power to their bats, and that they can do some things with swing plane and bat path to help them just improve the barrel accuracy a little bit better. And they believe they can do some things with approach too, to, you know, help them do what you see Spencer Horowitz doing sometimes now in the big league level, you know, taking shots earlier in plate appearances, or trusting the contact ability with two strikes to be able to think a bit more pull side with no strikes or one strike, and, you know, get out in front a little bit more. It's something that they've been doing with Alan Roden to try to get him to hit for a bit more power in the minors. So that's an interesting through line for me. And up until the Kikuchi trade, they had really targeted young guys, right? Like Coffey's 20, what the pitcher they got was 19, you know, they got a bunch of 22-year-olds, so they really had targeted youth, and that's something that I know their draft model really values highly, and clearly they're valuing highly in trade as well. So it's a nice blend, but there are some trend lines through it.
Yeah, I like that player development trend line that you mentioned there, and you know, this is something we've talked about on the show before of, you know, you have to have a little bit of a, you know, what is your perspective on things? What is it? What is your strength? What is it you do well? What is it you believe in philosophically, either in acquiring or that you can teach? Yeah, and we'll see with a couple of these guys if the Blue Jays can be a finishing school for them, because a couple of these guys also need 40-man spots by the end of the season. You know, Rule 5 protection, and then in the case of Class A and Bloss, they're obviously on the 40-man already, as well as Loperfido, who's expected to join the team here. Are any of these guys, you know, those guys who are a little on the higher in the minors end, like this is it's not exactly a secret that the guys who are still on this roster after today, it's the start of an early audition for 2025 roles. And maybe those aren't, you know, everyday roles because the Jays have a lot of work to do to reinforce the 2025 roster. But do you think that's a fair framing of August and September here? It's, hey, this is an early start on the camp battles for that fourth outfielder, for that first bench guy off the first infielder off the bench and roles like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Blue Jays need to spend the last couple of months figuring out what they have, what they don't, and what they need. The wins and losses right now are kind of irrelevant in the greater scheme of things. Not the players don't want to win every night, not that they don't want to hit a home run every time they're at their plate. But, you know, it's from a team perspective, that's what you're seeking. There's a delicate balance there because, look, you got some veterans on this team who are still expecting to play, and you got veterans in the rotation who are still expecting to pitch. So with some of these close to the majors guys, you may leave them in AAA for the time being just so that the playing time's there and so they could be playing regularly. You know, I know that Class A is going to play some center and left for Buffalo, and, like, he's probably, or I mean, he certainly is just a better player, better prospect than Stuart Baroa. But are you going to bring him to the majors right now to sit on your bench and not play? No, you're going to send him to Buffalo to play every day in center and left to continue to develop and get familiar with how the Blue Jays do things organizationally and see what you have there. So that'll be kind of the balance going down the stretch. But I do think we'll see Class A, Bloss, maybe Wagner, like you said, Lopesito. These are guys who I think we will see in the big leagues down in the next 2 months.
Yeah, Lopesito, someone who Shai told us earlier, he's expected to join the team on this road trip, so we'll get a good look at him. I don't know why Lopesito seems like an Arden Zwelling guy to me. Is that I don't know if you've dug in on it, but is that a fair read?
Yeah, I haven't dug too deep into it. Seems like he doesn't have a super standout tool. He's just well-rounded and does a lot of things. Seems like a Blue Jays guy in that he's uber versatile and, you know, he can take a walk. There's clearly too much swing and miss there. Like, it's they're going to need to do something about the whiff rate, particularly in the zone. And I wonder if there's a little tweak that needs to be made there, because you look at the strikeout walk numbers, they weren't as bad as they are recently earlier in his career. So something changed there, and I don't know if that's approach wise. I don't know if that's him trying to hit for more power or what that is, but he's an interesting player, a useful player. Just seems like a really well-rounded guy who, you know, the floor, it seems, could be like fourth outfielder, and you hope you're getting more.
Yeah, you certainly do. So we are, you know, we're talking about the trades that have happened. There could be a little bit of work still be done today. Kevin Kiermaier and Trevor Richards are expiring contracts. Chad Green and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you know, guys who have term, but maybe you listen on them. Has the prices we've seen around baseball, Arden, at all changed your thinking on some of the guys with term, whether it's Green, IKF, maybe even a Chris Bassett, or could you imagine those prices having changed the Blue Jays' thinking at all?
No, I think the Blue Jays have the same posture right now, where they're going to actively shop Richards and Kiermaier, and they're going to actively listen on Bassett, Gausman, anyone really who has term beyond the next 2 months. They just aren't going to go out and really be the ones that spur that. Like, they're going to let teams come to them. And, like, I know it's kind of tempting to say, oh, look at what Kikuchi got. You know, imagine what Bassett could get. But, I mean, we're talking about such different pitchers here. Mm-hmm. Like, Kikuchi's all power from the left side. We know how much power plays in the postseason. He's, not somebody who you would be afraid starting, like, the third game of a playoff series. He's not someone you'd be afraid putting into your bullpen and bringing out of the bullpen to situationally attack some lefties in the postseason. Chris Bassett, on the other hand, like, his greatest value is the 170, 180 innings of below league average ERA that he gives you throughout the regular season, right? Like, it's how he hauls innings over the course of 32 starts and gets you to the playoffs. Like, that's really what the kind of, that's the value that he brings. And, you know, you feel fine about him starting a playoff game, but it's not like you're shifting Chris Bassett to the bullpen. So, I don't think you can draw a straight line between the return that the Blue Jays got to Kikuchi to the return they would get for Bassett, because these are very different profiles of pitchers heading into the postseason.
Yeah, and to paraphrase, you know, something, I forget, maybe it was I can't remember who I read it from. Maybe it was Ken Rosenthal earlier, but you know, paraphrasing a league exec, just because the Astros overpay doesn't mean I have to go overpay as well. We saw the White Sox, and the White Sox get a bad organization asterisk as well, but they got significantly less for Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech, who both have a year and a half plus the Tommy Pham flyer. So it's you know, it only takes one team, but it doesn't mean you're going to get it from every team out there. Arden, before I let you go here, we saw Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis start the two heads of that doubleheader yesterday. Yariel got optioned after. Obviously, some roster churn that could happen with subsequent trades and things like that here. How much are you watching what those guys can do in the kind of SP4, SP5 roles the rest of the way here? I'm not sure exactly, you know, exactly how much they're quote-unquote auditioning versus being penciled into certain roles for next year already, but how closely are you watching those two and how they bounce back in the case of Yariel or build on this in the case of Bowden?
Yeah, they're being evaluated, certainly. I mean, the thing with Yariel is this is the only year that you can option him, so you want to take advantage of that. You're not going to be able to do that the next few years. And, you know, Yariel's almost gotten to a point where, like, the innings thing is out the window, right? With the time that he's missed. He had so much time off with the All-Star break and the couple of injuries that he had. You're not really worried about the workload anymore. If anything, you kind of want him getting more work right now to continue working on some of the refinements he's making to his delivery and having a bit less of that hesitation, maybe being a bit better with the release point and having a bit of a different pitch mix and obviously throwing more strikes than he has. So those guys are still being evaluated. And you're going to want to evaluate Bloss at the same time. That might start at AAA, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got a start in the majors at some point. You know, you talk about things that the Blue Jays really like. We were talking about on the position player side. Well, you know, on the pitcher side, the Blue Jays really like pitchers with unique fastballs, and Bloss has that because it spins a ton. It's got great spin efficiency, and he throws it from a pretty low release point with great extension down the mound. So he gets that great, like, ride or that carry over bats and gets a ton of swing and miss in the zone. Like, he's had really good whiff rates on his four-seamer in minors, and you don't always see that. It really kind of makes a 93, 94 mile per hour pitch play up. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going to want to get a look at that, like, just in the big leagues and how it plays, and they're going to want to work with him on how to set it up, you know, and how to be more consistent with his breaking stuff down in the zone, because that's when that really becomes a weapon, is when you can locate breaking stuff down or get players to chase away or below the zone down while spotting that fastball up that hitters are swinging under. I mean, that's when you could really see some results from Bloss.
Yeah, the type of fastball that's given the Jays trouble at times. And, yeah, obviously a knack for spinning the ball with that high-rise fastball and then a curveball with tremendous vertical break and a couple other breaking balls as well. So a lot to build on with Jake Bloss there. Arden Zwelling, thank you so much for making the time out today, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no worries, Blake. Good luck with the rest of your marathon here this afternoon.
Thank you. Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet. Yeah, Jake Bloss, interesting guy. I mean, I like those high-rise fastballs with the big spin, and I think it's because that type of guy, the Bailey Overs of the world, have given the Jays so much trouble the last 2 years. But yeah, Bloss is a guy who can obviously has a feel for spin, high-spin fastball, big vertical break on the curveball, a slider and a sweeper, or two different sliders, if you prefer to call it that. And then, honestly, the biggest thing is going to be, can the Jays work with him to turn that changeup into an effective pitch? Because right now, even in the minors, and especially when he came up to the majors, he had very significant platoon splits. And as a righty, he's going to need that changeup to neutralize lefties, at least to some degree. Lots of time for Jake Bloss to figure that out. Shai Davidi tweeting, by the way, just now, that Joey Loprofito, who is another part of that trade, is scheduled to arrive in Baltimore this afternoon. It's unclear if it'll be in time to be active today. The Jays have an open roster spot because of the Justin Turner trade, if they wanted to activate him. There was also a report from Eric Trudon earlier yesterday that Luis De Los Santos could be recalled from AAA. He's someone who's been in the org forever, dealt with some injuries this year, but has had a nice couple partial seasons in the minors the last couple of years here. So we'll see what the Jays do with that spot. Outside of Toronto, it's been a fascinating trade deadline, and there's probably lots to come. There's still the Garrett Crochet matter out there. You got to see what the Dodgers are maybe going to do. They've made some small infield tweaks here, but nothing too significant yet. The Yankees doing their big work with Jazz Chisholm, but potentially still a need for help at third base. Every contender could use a little extra bullpen help, even though a lot of relievers have flown around already. Cleveland has made an ad with Lane Thomas, but Are they done? Are other teams in the AL Central going to counter here? We've seen the Royals do minor stuff. They added Hunter Harvey a while before the deadline. They added Michael Lorenzen the other day. So, you know, they're not, I don't think they're aggressive buyers, but they're tweaking. The Minnesota Twins, you know, they weren't going to pay the Yusei Kikuchi price, but they're another team that could use some help there as well. We'll see what Robert Murray of FanSided thinks about it in just a minute here. We'll also continue to answer your text throughout the show. You can text us 590-590, standard message and data rate supply. Let's see what Robert Murray thinks about the rest of the deadline. Let's see how he's feeling. He is of FanSided. He joins us now. Robert, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Busy day so far. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Busy day so far. Indeed, busy couple of days. I want to talk to you about what is still to come around Major League Baseball. But before we do that, your thought on the work the work that the Jays have been able to do so far here over the first couple of days.
Yeah, I think they have done very, very well for themselves. And it really got highlighted and emphasized yesterday with the Kikuchi deal setting into the Astros for that three-player package. I remember as soon as that trade ended up breaking and the full package that was going back to Toronto, I had numerous different executives tell me that it was a massive haul and that it was an absolute coup by Ross Atkins. I think it was one of the best moves for a team at the deadline by far so far. I think the Cardinals, their trade yesterday was another one that was really good. But the Blue Jays off to a really good start, and I do not expect them to be done. I would expect more movement today from them.
Yeah, the Cardinals, a part of that three-team deal where they sent out Tommy Edman and got back Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham. Pretty good work there in a three-way with the Dodgers and the White Sox. When you say you expect the Jays to be busy, does that extend, in your estimation, beyond just Trevor Richards and Kevin Kiermaier, the expiring vets here?
Yeah, I think the majority of their movement today, if probably most of their movement, if not all of it, will be those expiring contracts. And I think Kevin Kiermaier is a very strong candidate to go. I think a team that could potentially be there to watch for him is the Los Angeles Dodgers. I know they've long liked him, and they could use some depth on their roster on offense and especially on defense as well. And I expect him to go. Trevor Richards, his struggles recently kind of complicate his trade case here. I don't necessarily know what it means for his market, but considering their overall prices for relievers and just how pricey and extensive they are, perhaps a team could end up seeing him as a potential value add. So I could see both of those players being moved today. I know there's other controllable pieces on their roster that are surely going to get asked about, but at this point, I don't think those are the most likely things in the entire world.
You mentioned the Dodgers there as a potential Kevin Kiermaier suitor. They tweaked the infield yesterday with Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman. That would be a depth outfield add. Do you anticipate or are you hearing at all that the Dodgers are going to take a bigger swing as well? I know they're getting some pitchers back from the IL over the last little bit and things like that, and they're pretty comfortable standings-wise. But, I don't know. It would seem a little underwhelming if they're doing bench tweaks and stuff like that over the whole deadline.
Yeah, exactly, because the moves or what the front office ended up signaling in recent days, both privately and publicly, was that they were going to be fishing in the big markets. And you would think that would include the top starters and even some of the top bats out there. And I think they remain in play for a guy like Garrett Crochet. We'll see what the odds are of a trade happening there. The thought of him or him asking for an extension and saying that he would not pitch in the postseason without an extension really kind of complicates this trade market. And I don't necessarily have a good read on what that'll mean for him as far as a trade, but I don't think it can be ruled out at this point quite yet. It's not as likely as it once was for sure, but I will not rule it out at all today. I think there's still a shot it happens.
In terms of what the White Sox can hope to get back in a Crochet deal, I mean, these comments have come out and then been walked back a little bit and then kind of walked forward again a little bit. Do you imagine that they've affected what Chicago can potentially get back in a deal? Just like I think teams would have hoped to have Garrett Crochet long term, obviously, but if you're going to have to pay the freight on that early and take that risk on, I'd imagine the prospect package you're getting back as the White Sox, it maybe takes a hit from that.
I think you're right, and that is really what kind of complicates this, because that's going to scare some teams, I would imagine. I know it gave some teams some pause when it initially got reported that he needed an extension in order to pitch in the postseason. But another factor in this, too, is the White Sox have received so much criticism for this past Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech trade that I think in order to trade Crochet, they would absolutely need to win the deal. And that being said, like, I've been reminded by teams that have spoken to the White Sox and even people around the situation there that the White Sox don't need to move Crochet or actually, hang on a sec. I thought I had a trade, but no trade. Sorry. It's that time of the year. But the White Sox don't need to move both Crochet or Robert this right now because they're controllable for 2.5 more years. And they can go back into this in the offseason and really try to take a wider look at it. And there could potentially be more suitors involved. Who knows where Crochet stands with his contract request. But overall, I don't know. I really feel confident that Robert's not moved, but Crochet is more of a mystery at this point.
Outside of the Dodgers, outside of Garrett Crochet, and I know I only got a minute with you left here because you got to answer those texts and stuff. What is the team that you're most curious to see what they do today? Like if that text comes down on your phone, who are you most interested in from the buyer perspective?
I would look at two of the most aggressive teams in baseball. It's the Dodgers and it's the Padres. The Dodgers, they're always lurking. You can never rule out a big move, especially after they ended up signaling that they were fishing in the big markets. And everything I can tell about the Padres is that AJ Preller is active on the market. He's looking at starting pitching. He remains active in the bullpen market as well. I wouldn't rule out another bat. So he remains active. A lot of different things going on there. So those are the two teams I'm really watching here at this point.
Yeah, and the Padres have played their way into the wild card spot there. Quickly before they go here, Braves did the Jorge Soler ad yesterday, kind of reuniting, taking some money off the Giants books there. They have tumbled. We thought maybe they were safe when these injuries first crept in. They do not have a great hold on a wild card spot here. Would you, Alex Anthopoulos is one of the most aggressive GMs in baseball. Do you think he'd be as aggressive as those two other teams you mentioned, or the Braves swimming through too much right now?
That's a good question, because the Ronaldo Lopez injury is not as serious as it was once feared. And they have some young starters who have emerged in that rotation. So I don't think that they'll be swimming in the big waters there for a starting pitcher. What I had heard a few days ago is that they were the most active and really only focusing on the outfield market. Now that they got Jorge Soler, I don't see them making another big splash. With Anthopoulos, you can never rule anything out with him. Like, he's the most secretive GM in baseball. I mean, you guys got to see that in Toronto for all those years. So moves can come out of nowhere, but that's at least my read as of right now.
Well, that'll be interesting to watch. Robert, we'll be following along at By Robert Murray on Twitter and checking out all your great work at FanSided. Thank you for taking the time out on a very busy day, man.
Hey, thank you so much. Hopefully we can break some news here in a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Text me first and I can put it on the air if it's Jays related. Have a good one, Robert. Robert Murray of FanSided. It'd be interesting. This is the thing. There have been so many trades already. My notebook is enormous in terms of stuff that has already happened and what the returns have been. But you look at some of these top teams and you're still left thinking, well, there's got to be something else. The Atlanta Braves are always aggressive. They have 50 injuries. Are they going to chase those injuries and try to add you? Do you just kind of pack it up and see where you can go? The Dodgers are comfortable. They have a good 6.5 game lead in the division, but the Phillies are really good. Are the Dodgers content to just be really good? Do they need to, you know, how much can you bank on Tyler Glasnow coming back, Clayton Kershaw coming back? Max Muncy continues to have setbacks with the oblique injury that he's dealing with. And then in the Central divisions, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers, we know they're probably not going to be super, super aggressive. They're a smaller market team that values their player development and the strength of their farm system and stuff like that. But they just lost Christian Yelich for potentially the rest of the season. And they're sitting in first place with a 7-game lead. It would be a shame to see that, you know, those squandered or you don't fortify around there. In the AL Central, I mentioned Cleveland went out and got Lane Thomas to add to their outfield. Do the Twins respond? The Twins are in a wild card spot right now. Maybe can't catch the Guardians the rest of the way here atop the division, but the wild card is very competitive here on the American League side, but on both sides. If you reset it, you know, Houston is only up in that division by a game. The Orioles are only up in the division by half a game. the Guardians are up further in the division. They're actually sitting pretty more than any other team in the American League right now. But we saw they were aggressive yesterday. They traded three prospects for Lane Thomas, who having a bit of a down year other than on the base paths. But again, a guy with, you know, everyday potential, at least strong side of the platoon potential, and a guy who's shown he can be a valuable contributor with years of control there. So and then the Twins, Royals, Red Sox, Mariners, Rays, all within 4.5 games of each other for two wild card spots there. We know what the Rays are doing. They've sold a little bit already, whether the playoff odds and their proximity to a spot suggest it or not. But you'd imagine all those teams will be busy. And then over in the National League, there's only 2.5 games separating Atlanta, the Mets, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Pirates, and the Cardinals, all for three spots. The Giants on the periphery of that as well. You know, will they dangle Blake Snell? Was Jorge Soler strictly a money move and they're going to stick it out otherwise? The Reds kind of on the fringes of that. They'll probably mildly sell there. But there's a lot of fascinating stuff still to happen. There are a lot of very interesting teams. And then, of course, there are sellers like the Blue Jays. There are sellers like the teams at the very bottom of the league who have very little to offer. But teams like the Reds, like the Cubs, like the Giants, like the Rays, who are, you know, good enough to be on the periphery of a race, so they might have some pieces that are interesting if it is a seller's market. The Rays clearly have believed that the seller's market is a time for them to cash in, even though, again, they're only 3.5 out of a playoff spot with pretty decent playoff odds considering. Let's take a break. See what Ben Clemens thinks about the deadline so far. He's been breaking it all down at Fangraphs with the rest of the Fangraphs crew. We'll continue to answer your text to 590-590. You can text us there. Standard message and data rates may apply. There's lots in there, so we'll do a bunch of text line stuff the rest of the way as well. Ben Clemens joins us next as we continue on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays active, not yet today, but pretty active the last little bit. Five trades, 11 prospects coming back in, five players outbound. I still expect a little bit of movement here. Proximity to the CBT, something we'll explore as we open up the text line a little bit later. Let's take pulse of the entire trade deadline. Let's talk to Ben Clemens of Fangraphs, who's been writing up. And the way it's gone so far, by luck of the draw, he just keeps writing up Jays stuff because the Jays have been very active, and that's how it goes. Ben Clemens, good morning. How are you, man? Good afternoon, rather.
Well, how are you?
I'm good, other than not knowing what time it is, not knowing where in the show I am. Curious, how does it work when you guys are handling trade deadline week and trade deadline day? Are you calling dibs like when a trade comes down? You're like, I want to write that Kikuchi one. Are you just next up in the rotation? How does that go?
It's somewhere in between. So there are a few players that will kind of have free done. I actually don't have any of those this year because it's just been smashed up so much against kind of the All-Star game. It's been really busy, but mostly it's just a rotation. Like, hey, who's available? We got to write this trade. Everybody else is writing. And it worked out luckily because I think the Kikuchi trade actually broke the market. Like, I think everyone else now is just calling Jeff Bagwell trying to get through, and they're not willing to trade until they can get through to the Astros after that deal.
Yeah, so look, we talked about it a bunch on the show today. Obviously, Jays should be happy with that return. You know, they didn't want to be here in the first place, but that's a good way to, you know, turn it around in a position you didn't want to be in. You called it in your headline an astronomical haul. Why do you think the Jays were able to extract so much out of the Astros for 2 months of a guy I really like, and you say Kikuchi, but if you're just looking at pure market factors, 4.75 ERA, a little bit of trouble with the home runs and things like that, that maybe don't play all the best in Houston's environment, you know, hope it works out for them. But like you said in the headline, that's an astronomical haul relative to expectations.
Yeah, so I've thought about this one a lot. So I started it last night, finished it this morning, had a little bit of time to brainstorm. And what I've got for you is, I think the Astros specifically wanted Kikuchi for some reason.
Okay.
Because if they just started calling everyone up and said, like, we're going to start with our top pitching prospect, who is kind of a consensus top 100 guy, we'll throw in some more people. We'll throw in another, like, really good prospect, start giving us pitching names. Like, so someone would have been like, okay, deal. Great. It would have been done by now for someone with similar projections, like, to Kikuchi. So the reason that that didn't happen, the reason that, like, this isn't Jack Flaherty or, like, a little bit of a lesser return, or maybe Eric Fetty. Like, you know, there were a lot of guys the White Sox are always targeting starting pitching. I think the reason is that the Astros proactively wanted Kikuchi. I don't think it makes a lot of sense if this is just like, oh, I don't know, let's throw around some prospect and see what we can get. They would have gotten more for less, basically. So the only thing that makes it make sense to me is, yeah, they just really wanted Kikuchi, and they were like, we don't want to lose this trade. For us, fair is kind of Bloss and Wagner. Let's just throw in Loprofito and really make sure they say yes now. But it's pretty crazy. I was surprised when I saw Bloss as the return at first. I was like, oh, great deal for the Jays. And the names just kept coming. It was crazy.
Yeah, it is a lot. And you know, again, the Astros may be locking in and wanting just Yusei Kikuchi. Again, I really like him. I love watching him pitch. The athleticism, yeah. The quality of stuff, strikeout right up, walk right down, and things like that. But when you look at where he slots in for the Astros and how maybe he plays in that park, do you have a little concern that maybe he's, you know, like ends up profiling like a number 4-5 type for this Astros team rather than the kind of number 2 price they maybe paid for him here?
Yeah, I mean, they don't think that, obviously. They must think that, you know, he's a good fastball guy, rising fastball guy. They are good at working with players like that. Like, Bloss is similar. Like, that rising fastball is his best pitch. He doesn't throw it that hard, but it works. So maybe they just think, like, oh, man, like, if he just did these two things, we could really unlock him. I mean, I don't know. I feel like every time we come on the show, we talk about what Kikuchi can get traded for, and he's been really bad for the last 2 months while it's been clear he's going to get sold. And I don't know, like,
didn't matter.
Like you said, a lot of risk, but I think the Astros have been kind of strange in their trades in the past 2 years, and this just kind of furthers that trend. Good on the Jays for having a guy they wanted. And yeah, like you said, it's kind of a shame that it's in this place, but hey, at this conversion rate, if they trade the other guys who are on the block, they're going to get a lot back. I think they're unlikely to hit this rate again, though.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Like you laid out there, it seems like the Astros wanted Kikuchi specifically, and you know, we haven't seen a ton of starting pitching movement yet, but the other ones have not backed up this kind of market. On the Astros side of this, in addition to the the ballpark or Kikuchi home run question mark, do you think there's more to come for this Astros team? This to me really, like, especially the fact that the Jays didn't pay any down, I believe that's going to push the Astros into the second luxury tax level. Like, it feels like if you were going to be that aggressive for Kikuchi, it wouldn't be your only move.
Yeah, I agree, especially since they like hurt their depth a little bit by trading Loprofito. He's not like amazing, but you know, utility players are kind of important when you're like a little banged up like the Astros. Kyle Tucker's still not back, still no exact timeline for his return. It looks like a very strange construction of a roster right now. Like, I think they need hitting as much as anything, but also, you know, their rotation is back to being 5 men because they just swapped Loss for Kikuchi, but they've said that they want to go 6-man rotation to protect Hunter Brown and Ronel Blanco's innings because they're both going to hit highs soon. Yeah, I mean, they need to do more, but who are they trading? Who are they trading to get more? Like, they just kind of emptied out the top shelf of their farm system. It's both thin and like light on high impact guys. Maybe they're just going to eat a lot of money to do this. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for what's going on here, but yeah, I'm kind of at a loss.
Yeah. It's a tough one to figure. And like you kind of alluded to there, the Astros, while a very well run team over the last decade or so, you know, a little more curious the last, I don't know, 18, 24 months, with some of their moves there. Let's look at a couple other things that happened already. You also wrote up the Jays dealing Justin Turner to the Mariners. This one I'm mostly interested in from the Mariners' perspective because, you know, RJ Schreck is an org depth guy. Doesn't seem to like he's going to slot in on any prospect list or anything like that just yet. Yeah. Surely the Jays see something in him, but this is probably more about getting out of some of Turner's money. The Mariners had just DFA'd and then traded Ty France, who makes significantly less than Justin Turner, is also a righty. Turner hitting lefties better this year. But looking at those moves in totality, what did you make of that change for the Mariners?
I think basically what it comes down to is that Turner is much more steady. I'd be shocked if Turner looked broken the rest of the year. Like, he is not his former self, obviously. I mean, you know, the last 2 years in the AL East have kind of been his swan song. Like, he doesn't have the power anymore, but he's very steady. And the Mariners, like, Ty France is not very steady. He's kind of boom bust. And it felt like they were really feeling the pinch of that. Like, they have nobody who gets on base on that team. And I think they just said, eh, like, money's money, whatever. Like, we just need a veteran hitter. Like you said, for the Jays, they just... Turner wasn't doing anything for them. Like, the ship has sailed. And not paying his money is nice. Getting a prospect who... Hey, if he ends up being, like, the next Kevon Biggio, that's an incredible outcome. But it's not impossible. Like a utility dude who does a little bit for you is a nice thing to get as a throw-in when you're trying to get rid of salary. I think the Mariners actually have ended up in a good spot where they need a thing that no teams want. Like, do you think there's a big market for Justin Turner? Absolutely not. Like, no one wants the 5 to 10% better than league average bat anymore because their farm systems are really good at churning them out and no defensive value, except the Mariners can't hit. Like, just really legitimately can't hit. You would be... I'm not a Mariners fan, so I kind of like tune into their games when they're the last game on, basically. But oh my God, like this is, it's not one of the worst offenses in baseball for a playoff team. It's one of the worst offenses in baseball. And so that actually kind of helps them in that the things that they would love to have that would vastly increase their floor, every other team is like, just take it, please take it. And so I think that trade was kind of a win-win. Like you said, it's more interesting for what it means for the Mariners, which is, they've just said, ah, man, like, we're so bad that Justin Turner actually meaningfully improves us, which is not even true for most of the teams in baseball. I would love to be in a position where I could add players other teams are looking to discard. And hey, they're really good at developing pitchers. There's a reason they're a playoff team, despite an abysmal offense. But I think that, like, I heard some rumors of a big swap that included, like, Vlad and other names for a Mariners pitching, like, top name. It always seemed like it was kind of a long shot. And it seems like they've just decided, why would we trade like really good players for really good players? Because we only need decent players to raise our floor. So I get what they're doing. It's just a very strange team. I struggle to think of a team that's built so unbalanced and is actually good.
Yeah, it really does speak to the 53% thing, right? The hey, if we win 53% of our games, we'll make the playoffs sometimes, and we'll random our way to a World Series, which has been unfortunately the kind of Mariners ethos over the last little while. So the Mariners are tied for the American League West lead. We talked about the Astros as well. Rangers may be doing at least a minor sell-off here, and then one just a spot ahead of the Mariners if we look at the wild card race. The Boston Red Sox, they're a game out of the wild card. They've had a stronger last third of the season to get themselves back in that mix. They had Danny Jansen from the Blue Jays. And I don't want to overdo the Jays stuff when we're talking league-wide deadline stuff. But Danny Jansen as a part-time catcher, start against lefties, do a little DH. It sounds like Connor Wong might play some second base. Man, it's kind of the opposite of the Kikuchi in Houston when it comes to ballpark. Danny Jansen could play ping pong with that green monster. Did you like that ad for Boston?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just really like Danny Jansen. I feel like for whatever reason, he's always like, there's always been some reason that he's not considered like a more impressive player. It's like there's a playing time problem or there's a contract problem. There's an injury problem. It's always something. But when he plays, he's great. Like, when's the last time Danny Jansen looked like completely lost and bad? It's been forever. And that's nice for a catcher, like good defense, good offense. Obviously his value is suppressed by the fact that he's a part-time catcher who's about to be a free agent, but yeah, like that really improves the Red Sox to me. I think that's a really good deal for them. As you mentioned, they have a big hole at second base. Like that's, I guess, Connor Wong. It was supposed to be Vaughn Grissom, but instead they sound like they might be interested in sending him back to the minors. That Chris Sale trade is looking really painful for them now.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And we'll see. Who knows? Maybe they do a little. So there were also rumblings that I'm blanking on. Sorry. There were other rumblings about other potential Red Sox machinations as well that are kind of, you know, yeah, they seem a little, they seem Emmanuel Valdez. That's the guys whose name I was trying to remember about him potentially being involved. Another infield guy. Okay. So around baseball, those are a couple of the Jays related ones. What have you liked most that's gotten done so far? You know, you can lean to the buyer side. That's obviously always a little bit more interesting. But you know, if we were ranking these out or most fascinating, what have you liked most?
Just pouring through these right now just to make
there's
sure
a lot of them, right. Man.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend. Nothing's happened today yet because I think everyone kind of shot all their bullets over the weekend. I think the Cardinals did really well to get Eric Fetty. I don't think there's going to be a better pitcher move this deadline. They gave up meaningfully less than the Astros gave up to get Kikuchi for a guy who's controllable next year and who I would prefer this year. I don't know. Like, I liked that trade outright, and on like a relative value basis, it's crazy. Imagine if the White Sox got that return back for Fetty, we'd be like, oh, this all makes sense, and then Kikuchi will get very little. Instead, it kind of was reversed. Fetty has been very good this year. He fits the Cardinals really well because he's a low walk, low strikeout guy in a giant stadium. It's kind of the opposite of what you were talking about with, it's Jansen-esque, where the player and the park are good, as opposed to Kikuchi-esque, where you better hope there's something hidden in there. I guess on the opposite side, I kind of hate the Dodgers side of that trade. Tommy Edman's like a league average hitter who hasn't played in a year. And they were the ones doing all the heavy lifting to send people to the White Sox to get things moving. So I don't quite understand what's going on there. I think I would prefer Miguel Vargas just like right now to Tommy Edman. Edman's not even that cheap next year. He's $9 million for a year. He's very versatile, but I don't quite get that. So I think that trade was like really the Cardinals kind of eating the Dodgers lunch, which you don't see every day. That was a surprising one.
Yeah, I had trouble working my way through that one as well for the White Sox return. And like at one point I was like half jokingly looking as like, is the Miguel Vargas in this deal the St. Louis Cardinals like high, like low A prospect Miguel Vargas, not Major League Baseball Miguel Vargas? Because it was a little tough to marry the values there. And the Cardinals, I mean, the Cardinals doing good work like this two games out of the NL wild card. And that's obviously, you know, what do we got? We got seven teams within four games of each other for three spots there. Is that the race where you're most interested to see what happens today? Or is there another kind of leverage point in the standings?
I'm really interested in the AL West. The Jays really poured fuel on the fire. They're just like, you know, they're selling to both sides, right? Like everyone who's interested in getting better there, they're throwing whatever they can at it to keep both of those teams interested in adding. The NL Central's like that too a little bit. Like the Brewers are far ahead, and so that makes it a little less interesting. But they're also kind of gearing up while the Cardinals gear up. You know, they got Frankie Montas, which seems like a pretty good deal for them. I really liked them getting Nick Mears from the Rockies. But the thing is, they like paid a fair rate for it. Relievers have been very much in demand this deadline. Makes sense. I mean, we've talked about this. Like there aren't that many great relievers available. And I think you've seen that in a lot of the returns for them. Garcia got a lot. Like a lot of these guys, Mears got, you know, like two legitimate prospects in return. Both people who will help out the Rockies, I think. Carlos Estevez got a ton when the Angels traded him. It feels like it's been a good time to be trading pitchers. And specifically, like the NL Central and the AL West are doing a lot of the lifting and trying to grab guys there. Those are the interesting races, right? The NL wildcard race is really bunched up with a ton of teams. And the AL West is like really interesting because I don't know, like both of those teams really think they're going to win the AL West. And the Rangers, who like theoretically should be kind of close, are not acting that way, which puts more pressure on the Astros and Mariners because like they're getting a better runway. One of the teams has dropped out. You really want to win now. I think that's going to drive a lot of what's going on this afternoon. Do the Mariners want to improve their offense further? It's still bad. Look, they've added Randy Arozarena already. They've added Justin Turner, and it's still bad. Like, it's still not a good offense. They could use more. Julio's out for a while. JP Crawford's out for a while. I think that's somewhere to look. Like we said, the Astros could use everything. The Astros have a very strange construction of a team right now. It's like top heavy, but doesn't have enough pitching. Yeah, I don't know. I think that both of those teams have more to do, and that'll drive a lot of what happens this afternoon.
All right. The biggest question of the deadline for you, of course, is anyone off your trade value list going to get dealt?
Yeah, sounds like no. Luis Robert was the guy, right? And
Derek
Skubal may be the guy, if not Robert. The White Sox have... I don't know, man. If you can figure it out, let me know.
Nope.
You have my phone number. I'm trying to figure out what to say about it, and I got nothing. I don't know. It doesn't really feel like they are moving with the urgency you would expect for a team with tons of very interesting players on a historical like awful stretch. They should be acting like the 2015-2016 White Sox and just sending out everything that's not nailed down to get whatever they can to salvage this. Instead, I don't know, like, Robert doesn't have a lot of value to them, and I understand that he's like on the downswing, but I'm not that confident he's going to upswing back from here. I if I were them, I would be working harder on that. I mean, maybe they are. I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not in the front office over there, but I'm surprised by how little movement they've had and how the movement they've had has been strange. Like packaging a bunch of players and like getting Dodgers prospects who are not super high upside in return. I don't know. Like, again, I'm probably the high analyst in all of baseball in Vargas. So I liked that, but I understand that relative to kind of consensus, not lovely. Scooble's not going to get dealt, I don't think. Like, I think the time, there would be a lot more smoke if that was going to happen. Like, if you were trading Tarek Scooble, you're not doing it like, oh, I got one offer I liked, we're keeping it in stealth mode, like, trade's going to come down and no one will have heard about it. You have to, like, socialize it around the league, tell Ken Rosenthal, like, talks are heating up, sources say. Like, you got to make sure you're getting the most when you trade the Cy Young, probably, like, the Cy Young favorite by a mile. Like in season when you're not that far out of the playoffs. So I think he's just fully off the table now. That's kind of it for the guys who I thought might get traded. Garrett Crochet seems like he was like just off the list, but he's also not getting dealt, I don't think. Not enough time to work out this extension that he wants. Very reasonably, by the way. I really sympathize with kind of what's happened to him here, where you really don't want to get traded to a playoff race, have a team be counting on you, go way over your innings total, hurt your arm, and it's like, well, that sucks. The White Sox got a bunch for me. You know, the team I went to got a bunch for me and I didn't get a bunch for me. I understand why he'd like some kind of like monetary certainty if he's going to go way over his like kind of like established norms in pursuit of a playoff bid for some team he's never pitched for before, you know, tomorrow, should that happen. So that's kind of it for the top 50.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in if you're Crochet, I'm sure. And surely when those things get leaked, they immediately get framed a certain way because people who are leaking it have different incentives and counter leaking it and things like that. It's been fascinating to track. It'll be a fascinating last 5 hours or so here. Ben, we should let you go so you can get back to the Slack chat or whatever it is, calling dibs on the next trade that comes up here, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Ben Clements of Fangraphs. Again, the trade value series is always worth going to read. No one off that top 50 is going to get dealt this year. It's a super helpful tool I always find in setting up the next offseason when a lot of guys who... the guys are just more gettable. You're not... It's hard to envision a Vlad trade at the deadline when there's term left. It's less hard to imagine it in the offseason. It's hard to imagine, you know, Tarek Skubal getting dealt right now when he has 2+ years left of control and the Tigers aren't that far away. And, you know, it's easier to envision that in the offseason when there are more suitors and you can kind of reset and the immediate needs aren't as pressing as the big picture needs. It's just a little easier to see guys of that ilk. So the trade value series is always super valuable. Fangraphs always super valuable, breaking down all these trades. And again, Ben keeps drawing Blue Jays trades. So if you want to read more about the Kikuchi return or about the Justin Turner trade, about the relief pitcher market, lots of good stuff over there. In our final hour here, we're going to talk to Anthony Castrovince of MLB. We're going to talk to our pal Chris Black, producer at Sportsnet. We're also going to continue to answer your questions from the text line. You can send it to us, 590-590, standard data and messaging rates may apply. Rick in Toronto asked, does the generous return for Kikuchi indicate the Astros' intentions of keeping him long-term? Possibly, but you don't have to pay for that. There's no such thing as bird rights or restricted free agent rights in baseball. You just go out and sign him. Like, I guess, yes, you could give him, you do acquire the right to give him a qualifying offer, and then if he leaves, you get a compensation pick back. That is a small element of this from the Astros side. But yeah, you don't need to overpay for a guy just because you want to keep him, because you're bidding against a rental market, not a market with term. Relevant to the Astro side of it for the comp pick part of it, but I don't think relative to necessarily to the price they paid here. Matt in Woodstock asked if I think there's any chance Bogaerts moved for a decent haul today. Seems like he's done here. It's hard to see, man. A guy who's value would be at its lowest, who's had a down year, who's on the injured list. Even if teams, you know, we talked to Jim Bowden a couple times and he said teams aren't turned off by the down season, teams aren't turned off by the calf injury, but it's still hard to see you getting proper value. And again, this is where I go back to, you know, Ben Clements trade value series and stuff like that. Those kind of larger scale franchise altering trades are just a little easier to picture, a little easier to navigate and understand in the offseason when more suitors, you can reset the table for your entire franchise, et cetera. It wouldn't be a 1000% shock I fall out of my chair on air, given the way this season had gone and some of the, you know, some of the teams that had been circling prior to the injury, but I'd be pretty surprised at this point. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Anthony Castrovince. Let's talk to Chris Black. Let's continue to answer your text to 590-590 as hour four of the Jays Talk Plus deadline show rolls on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. 1 hour to go here with us. Ailish and Justin will take you from there to 4 p.m. and then Blair and Barker come at you at 4, taking you right through the trade deadline. If 4 hours of me was not enough, you can check me out on Blue Jays Central around 6 o'clock as well, breaking down all the deals from the Blue Jays perspective. They have traded 5 players away. They've gotten 11 prospects back. Let's see what Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com, of MLB Network, and author of A Fan's Guide to Baseball Analytics thinks about it. Anthony, good afternoon, rather. Been on the air too long. How we doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's going to be a long day, I think, for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, what's 5 more hours, right?
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Typically, the trade deadline is the day, right? But we've had, it feels like the last 4 days have been the trade deadline with the way things have been moving.
Yeah, a lot of work getting done on the weekend. My list of trades that have already happened is extremely long. I can't find anything in it anymore. It's good stuff. It's made for a lot of fun, and then we'll see what happens at the buzzer here. Did want to ask you a couple MLB-wide things, but first, this is a Jay show. Your reaction to the price tag for Yusei Kikuchi yesterday? Were you a little surprised by how much Houston paid there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with, you know, Kikuchi hadn't pitched particularly well of late. And, you know, obviously his track record is going to outweigh any small sample like that, but it's still, it's not like he, you know, brought the market to a fever pitch, you know, with the way he's pitched of late. So I definitely was surprised by that. I think a lot of people were, you know, Eric Fetty was traded earlier in the day for, didn't seem quite as punitive a price tag in that particular deal. But yeah, with Kikuchi, it's a great haul for the Blue Jays. You know, if these guys are what people believe they can be, I mean, you get immediate major league help. You get a legitimate prospect in his own right and Billy Wagner's son. You know, I think Bloss alone could have been a reasonable deal for Kikuchi. So to get those three guys, I thought was a really good job by the front office.
Yeah, so it's, you know, and the thing that colors all of this is nobody wanted them to be sellers. They weren't supposed to be here, but you got to make the most of it while you can. I know, Anthony, that a lot of people had wanted a Vlad trade for the excitement level, you know, so few impact hitters on the market. It doesn't seem like that's something that this front office has really entertained. So that aside, if we assume that Vlad's going to be back 2025, Bo's going to be back for 2025, what do you make of this idea that the Jays could, you know, do the sell-off here with an idea of retooling for 2025? A lot of work ahead of them still, but do you think that's a needle they could thread?
I'm skeptical. You know, last night's trade helps in that regard for sure. I'm still skeptical just because they've obviously had trouble building around Vladdy as it is, Vlad and Bichette for that matter. And, you know, you talk about threading a needle. It's a very difficult thing to do. Those guys in that front office, Shapiro and Atkins, they've actually done it before, in Cleveland, but, you know, it's always a fascinating dynamic of when teams are ready to pull the plug and when they're ready to go for it. And this is kind of that in-between mode that's really difficult to pull off, but, obviously they value the player in Guerrero and who could blame them for that. You know, he will still have trade value a year from now, should things go south. We know that it won't be as high as now, but he'll still, you know, if he's especially performing like he's performed the last couple of months, you know, he'll still have tremendous value. So, so on one hand, I get it because it's hard. It's hard to trade your franchise face, especially, you know, earlier than you absolutely need to. But on the other hand, man, it's going to be hard to pull off, barring some more, you know, trades that involve immediate help for the team and then obviously some spending and free agency.
Yeah, a lot of lifting left to do in the off season here. I almost said in the summer. No, this is the summer in the off season for the Blue Jays. So, Anthony, if Vlad doesn't get traded, that's one bold prediction from your 12 bold predictions for today's trade deadline down. The second one on your list, though, is still very much in play, and that would be the Dodgers landing Garrett Crochet. We've seen the Dodgers only kind of tinker with their infield depth in Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman. I haven't seen them take that big swing yet. Garrett Crochet is still very much on the market. Is that one now kind of top of list for deals you'd like to see happen?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I do think Crochet is going to get dealt today. I think in the last 24 hours, we've got a little more clarity on that because obviously it was complicated by, you know, his desires to have an extension, to pitch in the postseason, and the way he wants to be utilized, you know, starting versus relieving. So that should limit his market. But the Dodgers are certainly a team that could, you know, I mean, they could probably give him what he wants financially. They could probably do that end of things. But even beyond that, you know, they've got so many different arms, and that's just how they operate anyway, is workload management for their starters. And so they could probably do that for Crochet down the stretch. So it would not shock me one bit. You know, they got the prospect capital to do it. They got the financial capital to do it. They have the need in their rotation because it's hard to feel good about, you know, Glasnow's injury history as we look here in, you know, deeper into the second half. Kershaw's injury history, of course. Yamamoto might not pick up a ball for them the rest of the year. So I sense some motivation on their part to do something in the rotation. And I think they are not uniquely qualified to make it work with Crochet, but I think they're probably the team in the best position under these unusual circumstances of a guy who has already like doubled or more than doubled his career high in innings. So obviously whoever gets him has to be careful with him. I think the Dodgers can do that.
That'd be interesting to see, and you have to imagine the Dodgers make some sort of splash. They are not they're too leveraged on this season and win now to just, hey, Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman or Kevin Kiermaier, field depth that. Yeah, you got to do something a little spicier there. You had mentioned, you know, in your bold, and again, this was a bold predictions piece, not a reporting piece. It's fun. It's, you know, and the predictions are necessarily bold because that's the whole point. Lane Thomas was a part of that Dodgers return for you as well in the bold prediction. He has instead gone to the Cleveland Guardians. What do you like about that fit, if you like that fit for the Guardians, a team I know you know well?
Yeah, I like the fit. He's right in the mold of players they value. They value contact. They value speed. And so he's going to fit right in that Cleveland clubhouse. And, you know, they need to shore up the corner outfield production in right field, and he can help that. And I really think the speed was probably the most enticing thing for them to give them. They love to hustle on the base pass. They love to be aggressive on the base pass. So there were other options out there. You know, in my bold predictions, I think I had Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham, and then ended up being the trade the Cardinals made for those two guys. And so, but I thought Pham a little more, you know, maybe a little more thump in the bat down the stretch. Who knows? You never know. I mean, you're acquiring guys, and we're talking about 8 weeks of baseball where anything can happen. But yeah, I like Lane Thomas a lot. He's a guy who's under control for next year as well, so that was important to them. So he's affordable. He's cost control, you know, controllable for next season, and just fits their offensive mindset in general.
Elsewhere in that American League Central, you know, the Guardians have a pretty good lead in the division. They're 5.5 up, but Minnesota's also in a wild card spot. We know they won't spend a ton of money, but they could probably also use an addition here. Anyone you like for the Minnesota Twins if they're going to kind of counter the Guardians loading up?
Yeah, I put Cal Quantrill in that piece, but I mean, the thing with the Twins is whatever they do, and they do, I think, need to do something in the rotation. They're signaling to other teams that they have to be kind of cost neutral. By that, I mean, you know, giving up money to take on money. And those are trades that are hard to do. And that could end up being a contender to contender situation where, you know, you just swap assets from different positions. Or it could, you know, it could be one where they have to, you know, attach a contract to go back to the acquiring team. So it's, I don't know. The Twins aren't in the greatest spot. They kind of signaled that last offseason where, you know, they paired payroll coming off a division title. I know fans weren't happy about that, but here we are. They're back in contention again, and it'd be nice to see them, you know, load up and go for it. But it seems to me they're trying to be as cost neutral as possible.
Yeah, and that's something we've, you know, it's the reality of baseball sometimes. We've seen teams be cost neutral or cost negative as they try to tiptoe around adding in the past. The Orioles have been one of those teams in the past. They've been a little bit more aggressive here. They added Zach Eflin. You had mentioned, to go back to your bold predictions piece, maybe a landing spot for Jack Flaherty part two there as well. What do you like about, or where do you like Jack Flaherty landing here today? I have to imagine he's the top starter that moves that's still on the board here, unless something catches us off guard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because Crochet is more enticing long term, because he is a long term acquisition. He's got incredible stuff, but Flaherty's number one for me, just in terms of what you can get down the stretch. You know, he can give you length down the stretch. He can give you impact down the stretch. It didn't work out for him at Baltimore last year, but that doesn't preclude them from adding him again. They're still open to that possibility. And, you know, they acquired Eflin, who they have under control for next year. So that could give them the flexibility to do, if they were to add another starter, you know, it could be a rental. And Flaherty is number one on that list with a bullet. So yeah, I mean, I like him a lot. I know a lot of teams like him a lot today. He's the bell of the ball right now, I think, because you mentioned, I mean, there's a handful of teams easily on Yankees, but we've talked about the Guardians already, you know, the Royals. You can go down the list and with teams with the motivation to add another starter. So that would be Detroit put themselves in a really good position. You know, they signed him to a short term contract, and it could not have worked out better for them.
Yeah, smart. I mean, I'm sure they would have loved to be a couple of games closer, but pretty good asset management there. And you know, you can do it again with Dark Skubal next year if you need. Anthony, before I let you go here, we talked about a handful of teams there, but what team's most fascinating to you over these next 6 or 5 hours or so? Team you have your biggest eye on, or team you'd expect to be the noisiest?
Well, we just talked about the Orioles, and they're always really fascinating to me just because of, you know, I think that the American League is, I think both leagues have a lot of cluster going on. But the American League does not have a juggernaut. You know, we view the Orioles as a potential juggernaut in our minds, but, you know, they're having a really good season, but not a juggernaut type season. I think they are the team that could come out of this deadline as the clear favorite in the American League if they were to add another, like a Jack Flaherty. So they're really interesting to me. They have all the capital in the world to do that. It's just a matter of, you know, how aggressive they want to be, because, you know, these windows are precious and you want to maximize your opportunity, but you also don't want to close your window too fast. So it's always a delicate balance there. And then the Mariners, you know, they've obviously made some moves already, but, you know, there's clear, you know, I don't want to, maybe desperation might be too strong a word, but let's say desperation to win the AL West finally. They really want to get that done, and they're neck and neck with the Astros, so they want to put themselves over the top. You know, those are the top ones for me. And I'd like to see the Brewers, you know, make another move. You know, they got Frankie Montas yesterday, but I think they're in a really good position to be a team that can make some noise in October. They're not counted upon, as even though they've been in first place all year, they're not counted upon in the Dodgers and Phillies category. But they can play with anybody, I think, in October.
Sorry, I lied. I got one more quick one for you before we let you go. The White Sox on pace to threaten the worst modern day record of all time. In case we don't talk to you again this season, do you think they do it?
I'm going to say no, just because I've seen this enough.
Yeah.
And this is an extreme example, but I've seen this enough where it's a terrible team. They unload their best players, and you would think that that means they're even more terrible. But somehow, like, getting past the trade deadline, everybody's able to just relax a little bit more and play better. And young guys are getting their chance to show off, you know, show what they can do. And I don't know. I've seen this before where that team should be absolutely abysmal down the stretch and very well might be. But I could see them, you know, playing just well enough to not be the worst team ever. So that would be good for them.
Well, and here's the thing about how replacement level works. You replace a guy, you bring in a replacement level guy who replaces someone who's been below replacement level, you maybe get a little bit better. So we'll see how that shakes out. Right. Anthony, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Love the bold predictions column. I have fun with the rest of this day.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Anthony Kastrovitz of MLB.com and MLB Network, also the author of A Fan's Guide to Baseball Analytics, a really easy and accessible way to start to understand some of the terms we throw around and get thrown around in broadcasts pretty regularly now. But if it's something that you're not familiar with or want to get to know the history of a little bit more, great read there, A Fan's Guide to Baseball Analytics. We're going to keep answering some of your questions in the text line here. You can, I mean, at this point, I'm probably going to save a bunch of them for tomorrow because we have somehow made it through 3 hours and 15 minutes so far. And we got Chris Black joining us around 1:30. So answer a couple of these. If we don't get to them all, we'll sprinkle them in the rest of the week as well. You can send them to 590-590. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. Elliot, the Unionville old timer. I love guys signing this with their wrestling or UFC handles as well. How many years do they have to wait for a winning team? Elliot, I think their answer would be they intend to be a winning team again next year. Now, depending on what your definition of a winning team is, that could be longer. Are they going to enter next year as a World Series favorite? Unless they add Juan Soto and a couple other pieces, probably not. They're probably just going to be another, you know, a team that projects to be in the wild card mix like they did this year. You know, I think people generally had them projected for like 82 to 88 wins this year, which is a wide range, but you know how it goes at the fringes of the playoffs. A couple breaks here and there can change your outcome, but nobody was projecting them really to win the division and compete for the World Series. They're a playoff team. And I think that is something they could get back to within reason next year. But if your definition of winning season is contending for a World Series, I think they got a lot of work to do if that's going to be 2025. As much as I've liked their deadline so far, 2025, the work still has to happen. A lot of holes on that depth chart, and you're gonna have to stretch, you know, 50, maybe 60 or $70 million, depending on where the CBT line comes down and if they shed any salary here as well. We'll see how that goes. There was a question. Oh yeah, someone didn't sign this, but there was a question. Can you please summarize how much the Blue Jays could spend in the offseason and the implications of the CBT? So the CBT is the competitive balance tax. That's what we're kind of tracking if the Jays can get just a little below here. The information available publicly is imperfect. We have to make some assumptions about player benefits and you know, how many guys might get added to the 40-man or the service time and IL and things like that. We're working with imperfect information. But the best I can tell, they are, and we also don't know how much money they had in the Justin Turner deal. My read on it is they're close to ducking below it. If they're not there already, they can probably do enough the rest of the day to get below it. And this isn't just about saving money. The money is real. That's a factor. But this changes things like, this doesn't matter now because they've traded all the guys away. But if you were to offer one of your free agents a qualifying offer and they leave, you get a better compensation pickback. If you go out and you sign a free agent who signed a qualifying offer or was offered a qualifying offer somewhere else, you don't have to pay as much in draft pick compensation. You don't have to pay as much in international bonus pool money hit. There are at the higher levels of the CBT, you could get your draft pick drop 10 spots and things like that. The other component is that the Blue Jays paid in the tax last year. So if you expect them to pay into the tax next year, they would be a 3-year repeater, which means you're paying 50% on however much you exceed the tax. If you can get under the tax this year, that resets you. You're not a repeater anymore. So you're only paying 20% next season on what you're spending into the tax. And again, this isn't just about saving the money. It's about how you build your roster. So you don't have to pay as much in draft pick compensation. You maybe don't lose the international bonus pool money. And then let's use a round number. Let's say Rogers has told the Blue Jays, you can spend $250 million on player payroll next year. If they are spending only 20% on tax overtures versus 50%, that $250 million is going to go further. You can spend more of it on players that doesn't go into the tax. So it's relevant for that. It's only really relevant for that if the Jays intend to compete next year and spend into the competitive balance tax. If they duck below it and then they decide, we're going to blow it up in the offseason, it will have not mattered all that much. But yeah, I think they're probably close enough that they're going to duck below it here. I think that's something that makes the most sense. Chris from Kitchener asks, why don't the Blue Jays trade Springer, shave a bunch of money off in the offseason so they can pick up some decent players? I mean, that's something, though, they can explore in the offseason. You know, probably at this point in the regular season, you're not eager to pay down 2 years of a guy's money while he's playing particularly well. I also don't know that you'd get a, you know, there's probably some market skepticism on what George Springer's done lately. That's not to say I'm skeptical necessarily. But, you know, does a team think he's an 800 OPS guy again? Does a team think maybe, okay, he's gotten back and we can project him for a hot and cold 750? No. Do we believe the cold stretch more than the hot stretch? I just don't think with $48 million left over 2 years after this year, if you actually intend to compete in 2025, which is everything that they've signaled suggests that, I don't think they're going to explore that just yet. I think things would have to take a turn. If you are competing and you have George Springer, you don't want to, you're paying someone else money for George Springer to play for them. It would have to be a pretty spicy prospect haul, I think, for them to explore that. And I just don't think with $48 million left over 2 years for a guy well into his 30s who showed some decline signs before turning it around this year, I don't think you're getting enough back in prospects for it to be really worth it. Now, if they were blowing it up entirely, yes, that's definitely something you explore. Eat some money, trade a player away, get as many prospects back as you can. But I think that's more in the blow it up scenario. Mike in Alberta asks, considering his upcoming return to health, solid play this year, and usefulness around the field, would IKF bring a return that's worth considering? I think so. I don't think he's going to blow the doors off or anything like that. But the Dodgers gave up a decent amount to get Tommy Edman back coming off the IL for a much longer stint. We got a trade. We have a trade during the show. It's not a Blue Jays trade, but the Yankees and Cubs, this is according to Jeff Passan of ESPN, the Yankees and Cubs are in agreement on a trade that will send Mark Leiter Jr. to the Yankees for Ben Cowles and Jack Neely. Cool. Not exactly a barn burner there, but another reliever gets dealt for a pair of prospects there. The Yankees continuing to add here with Mark Leiter Jr. Would IKF have a market? Yeah, if the Yankees are giving up multiple pitchers, multiple prospects rather for a reliever, the Dodgers are giving up multiple prospects for Tommy Edman, who's a league average hitter who's been on the IL pretty much all year. I think IKF could have a market. Nothing that's going to change the outlook of your franchise, but certainly something worth exploring. And that's not because I don't like IKF and wouldn't want him back next year. But again, and I feel this way about Chad Green too. If you look at those guys, they're good pieces, but $10.5 million for Chad Green, $7.5 million for IKF. If you're a good front office, you should be able to replicate that this offseason. Pick up a couple prospects for it, have that $18 million, go spend it on a reliever and a helpful utility piece, and maybe have a little money left over to spare, and you get the prospects back. That takes some fine work, but if you believe you're a capable front office, should be something you know, $18 million for those two guys is a way you should be able to spend your free agent money. And then also it's worth noting too, when it comes to IKF, that while Chad Green is at a position of desperate need for this team moving forward, the Jays have a lot of infield prospects, a lot of bench infield prospects. Will Wagner, another guy who could potentially reach the majors as an infielder. Some of the other guys who are down in AA through this trade have some positional versatility as well. So that might be a case where you can reroute that $7.5 million toward a more impact bat in a corner outfield, say, because you have the guys internally to play the utility spot to bounce around the infield. But again, IKF's been very good this year, very positive surprise. Someone who didn't sign there has asked if this deadline saves Atkins' job. I answered this one a little bit earlier. It's a data point. They've operated this well, but again, you have to keep in mind that they weren't supposed to be in this spot in the first place. And what's happened over the last 18 months and the inability to capitalize on the competitive window that they've had here, despite spending heavily, the weakness of the farm system before this deadline, those are important data points as well. I think you could probably have, you know, maybe it changes your opinion on things a little bit. And again, the fact that Atkins was the guy operating this trade deadline suggests to me his job security is stronger than maybe, sports talk radio and the texts we get and Twitter and stuff like that would want it to be, or would suggest it is. It's a data point, but they're not supposed to be in this place in the first place. There was a little bit of Kyle Dubas, in Kyle Dubas's era, and I like Dubas, but there were, you know, some of his best trades were, oh, you made a mistake, trade your way out of it, which is fine. You got to be able to do it. It's the Giants special too, trading away Jorge Soler and getting value back for a mistake contract you made. So again, data point, but nothing that I don't think, hey, how well you dug yourself out of the hole you got yourself in moves the needle as much as the longer, you know, 8-9 year body of work. Someone asked if Cal Quantrill could be a good fit coming out of Colorado, a Canadian guy. I mean, maybe if the Jays are going to start to do their work for future years now, I probably don't think they're in a position to be, you know, trading a ton of assets for a starter with only one more year of control and who's going to be, you know, probably make low eight figures in arbitration next year. I do like Kyle Quantrill. I like the chirpiness at a certain former now Boston Red Sox catcher that I found pretty funny. Someone who didn't sign there said that they've been getting into the show. Thank you for that. What's the biggest news that ever broke on one of your deadline shows? For Major League Baseball, nothing. Like, we got 2 years ago, I was in an afternoon time slot instead of this one, and we got the Mitch White trade. So Nick Frasso and a prospect whose name I'm blanking on for Alex DeJesus and Mitch White. So we got that one. That's about it. On the basketball side, had a little bit more, although trades broke not at the deadline. Like, the Pascal Siakam broke during the Raptor show that I was on with William Liu this year, but it was not during, it was not at the trade deadline, it was pre-deadline. So don't have a good answer for this one. I've been a little shut out in terms of actual stuff during the deadline itself. We'll continue to answer some of those today and throughout the rest of the week as well. Obviously, some of the ones from today might not be relevant after the deadline passes tonight, but right now we're going to take a break. We're going to talk to Chris Black on the other side. Take a look at a couple more of your texts, and I don't know. Are you guys that focused on Chris Bassett against Corbin Burns tonight? We can talk about that too. The Jays do play at 6:35. But yeah, let's take a break. Let's see how Chris Black feels about the deadline. We did a lot of deadline talk. Let's dig in a little bit on this Vlad heater too. It's been shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the team's best hitter has been hitting like the team's best hitter lately. And if you're talking about what this team looks like for 2025, that is a really relevant piece of information that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in the middle of the best streak of his career, save for the first half of 2021. It's been a lot of fun. Let's talk to Chris Black about it after the break as Jays Talk Plus Deadline Edition continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. A little seasons come, seasons go there for you on the way back in for our next guest, producer at Sportsnet, at Down to Black, King of the Threads. It's Chris Black. A little cuff the Duke for you, man. Seasons come, seasons go. Kind of fitting for today. It's like the official, hey, 2024 is gone. Let's focus on 2025, right?
We can't turn the page just yet. And you know what? As in my role as a TV producer, like, sometimes when you're not expecting good games, sometimes when you think you get a series like that sweep at home, right, where the team plays great, you get a lot of Vladdy turns it on, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, that was kind of fun, right? And that's all we want, is we want to be entertained, and I think the fans want the same thing. So, but this is a fun time of year. Seeing that Kikuchi trade break when it did, and then seeing the return, and we were all like, did they just get that much for Yusei Kikuchi? I mean, yeah, the year hasn't gone as we all hoped, but this is a fun time of year, especially when you have players to move.
Yeah, it is. And again, you'd rather be buying. You would rather be loading up for the playoffs here, but that's not the situation they're in, and we got to evaluate the situation they're in and how they're doing in it. How do you feel about how they've done? Obviously, the industry reaction to the Yusei Kikuchi trade tells us some pretty good things. The Jays have had 11 prospects come back in here for four expiring guys, and then Nate Pearson, a reliever who, you know, he'll make seven figures in ARB, but you know, a little bit of control, nothing to write home. But 11 prospects back in the door, the volume is at least there.
Yeah, the volume. But to me, I think when we first spoke about the deadline, when we kind of realized this is probably going to be a selling year, one of the things I said to you was I would focus on guys who have the potential to help in 25, I thought that's what they would do. And that's what we've seen, right? In the Houston return, in the Class A return, they're guys who give you a shot. It's a coin flip, something like that, right? Where the better value will come years down the road, but there's a few guys who have a chance to contribute next year. And I think that's one of the reasons why so far, I think it's been a pretty productive few weeks for the Jays.
So in terms of the return they got for Yusei Kikuchi, that's the one that kind of had the guys a little nearer to the majors. Jake Bloss, who maybe we see down the stretch here, certainly a guy who could pencil in for some of those starts in 2025. Joey Loprofito, who's going to join the team in Baltimore. They're in Baltimore, Blake. In Baltimore here, according to Shai Davidi. So he's going to be a major league piece. And then, yeah, Wagner is a guy who he's been assigned to AAA. So we'll see how close he is. There is some real proximity there. Relative to what we were expecting, I think this is a little high on the price for Yusei Kikuchi. What do you think went into that?
I think there's a few different things, right? And I mean, I think the first instinct for a lot of Jays fans, and I think it's a natural kind of reaction, is like, oh man, if Yusei's getting this much, then let's put Bassett on the market. Let's put Gausman on the market. Let's really reload, right? But I actually don't think you can draw a straight line from Yusei's return to what you could get for a Bassett or a Gausman. I heard you briefly with Arden last hour, and I thought he kind of laid it out pretty good about the key differences. And the biggest thing is I actually think a lack of term on contracts might be a good thing. It might be like kind of a reversal of how a lot of us think about trade deadlines, that, you know, having a pitcher without term, like if you just look at Houston, they wouldn't want a pitcher with term. They have seven starters ready to go next year, right? So, and I just think, so term is one thing. I think Yusei's performance like this year, like I think we all fall into a trap of looking at what actually happens on a baseball field. And as a fan, that should be all you care about. But people evaluating this stuff, people trying to project forward, look at things a lot differently than just the results on the field. They look at expected numbers. They look at the quality of stuff, stuff plus, pitch modeling things. And when you look at those things, as weird as it seems, Yusei Kikuchi, you can make an argument, has been the Blue Jays' best starting pitcher this year. So that's another thing. And I think the other kind of big aspect to it is he's a guy that can slot into the bullpen very easily. And in a big playoff moment, if there's two outs, two runners on, and Juan Soto's coming up, or Gunnar Henderson's coming up, or Stephen Kwan is coming up, or Josh Naylor's coming up, I think Yusei Kikuchi is a guy who can strike those guys out. And so I think he had some unique traits that he brought to this deadline. Having said all of that, I still think it's a really big return. So I think it's a great move by the Jays, but I also think it doesn't necessarily mean, hey, Bassett can get you a bunch or Gausman can get you a bunch.
Yeah, and the left-handed aspect of it relevant too when you look at who they could potentially face in, you know, a wild card series or something like that. Like, it's maybe, you know, you got to get there. You don't want to cart before the horse sit there, but, you know, a lefty is generally going to carry maybe a little bit more value, unless you're going up against a team like the Astros, I guess. So that's helpful context. And you know, I do, you know, we'll see where the Jack Flaherty price is, right? Garrett Crochet won't be a comparable because he's young and controllable, and there's the weirdness with his innings limit. Chris Bassett would kind of be in like, I guess the closest comp to him would be Eric Fetty, who with a year and a half of term got, and a lesser salary, got sent out with Michael Kopech and with Tommy Pham in a three-team deal and returned less than Yusei Kikuchi. So maybe a more helpful comp there, especially, you know, Bassett, obviously very, very fond of Chris Bassett, but going to be 36 and making 20-plus next year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the biggest thing for me is, like, if you move to Bassett, you'd probably be spending about what he's making next year to replace him in that rotation. Whereas I think there's a logical difference and a key difference. Whereas if you were to move, say, Chad Green at this deadline, I think you can replace Chad Green's production at the bare minimum, the same amount, if not less, and probably less. You could replace his production as a reliever. So I think it's more likely, I'm more in the camp of, hey, if you find a way to move, if you get a really good offer for Chad Green, I don't think you have to move Chad Green, because I do think he's a productive reliever. But if you got a good offer, I think you could move him and not really worry about replacing his spot. Whereas if you're trading one of those starters, I think it would cost just as much in prospects or money to replace them. And I don't think you're going to be overwhelmed with an offer. Could be wrong, but that's just my read of it right now.
Yeah, it's it would be a little bit of tiptoeing there. By the way, the relief pitching market continues to heat up. The Red Sox acquiring Lucas Sims from Cincinnati, according to Robert Murray, who was on with us a little bit ago. So that relief pitching market that would involve Chad Green at this point. We don't know the return for Lucas Sims yet. We know what Jimmy Garcia brought back. We saw really good returns for Carlos Estevez, Jason Adam, you know, better guys who have, you know, manageable term and things like that. Like, you got to look closely at the reliever market. But if the Jays did put Chad Green, if they did make him available today, you think they could get back? Like if we set the bar at the Justin Turner trade where you're getting out of money and getting like a fringy org guy back, you would set the bar higher than that?
I don't know what he would get in terms of prospect return, because I do think that salary is a little unique.
It's like a neutral asset, right? Like you're not.
Yeah, but I also think there's probably only so many teams who would even be willing to like allocate $10 million to a non-closing reliever.
Right.
If that makes sense. So I actually wonder how much he would get. But again, like still, if it allows you to reallocate some money for next year in terms of do you devote more to the hitting side or whatever, like I think that could make sense. I also think Trevor Richards, I think he could be moved. I know he's struggled of late. I think the struggles when we've seen him pitch, I think you go through this when you're a two-pitch pitcher. We've seen it with Kevin Gausman. If you lose the feel for that key pitch, which he has for the changeup for the last week or two, like it can get ugly, right? And that's fine. Like, so as an acquiring team, you'd have to be kind of hoping he could find it. But I also think the acquisition cost will be small. It'll be an org minor leaguer. So, but I think he could move it. But I don't think Chad Green would actually get you a ton of stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It's again, you're kind of, you like you laid out, you don't mind having him on the roster next year at 10.5, but you're kind of, that's hey, right, maybe I get an org depth guy and I'll reallocate that money. And maybe it's $5 million on a reliever and the extra pool goes toward, hey, I'm going to go for the same idea with IKF and that $7.5 million. You don't mind having him back, but could you use that $7.5 million differently? Could you build that infielder from within? The other potential trade piece for the Blue Jays today is Kevin Kiermaier. I know you have some thoughts on possible landing spots with him. Weirdly enough, there are some pretty good teams out there with poor center field defense. Don't know that anyone's getting Kiermaier for more than, defensive replacement, pinch run, kind of bench guy, like super Bradley Zimmer kind of purposes down the stretch here. But what do you like as landing spots for Kiermaier, with the kind of caveat here that the Jays are probably eating some money on that?
Yeah, for sure. They would eat money, but I don't think it's completely like this. Like, I don't think you need to do a veteran right. But I think you kind of want to take care of guys if you can, right? You're not going to move a guy just because. But I do actually think I am always going to have thoughts on outfield defenders. That's just my nature. Mm. But Cleveland for sure. Cleveland, strangely, we all view them as like a really good defense fundamentals kind of team. But they're actually really bad in center field defense in particular. They have a Gold Glover in left, obviously, in Kwan. But 29th in outs above average and fielding run value in center field. They're like, the guy playing center field right now is essentially a converted infielder. Tyler Freeman's played out there. He hasn't played very well. So I think you put Kiermaier in there, even if it's in a part-time basis, alongside Kwan. And all of a sudden, like a team that relies on pitching and has a great bullpen, like all of a sudden that gets even stronger. So I think that's a natural fit. The other one that's like huge and kind of surprising is the Dodgers, for a team that's so good and has such big resources. They have like a glaring hole in center field. Like Outman's been bad. Paez has been really bad. His roots are like, if you look at the video, it's just been horrible. Like, so they're like 28th in center field defensive run saved. So I think that's, and just like aesthetically, or like, I know I'm a numbers guy, but like aesthetically and like vibes basis, Kiermaier in like a Dodgers uniform, all white, 5 o'clock shadow, national television. Like my wife would like full on approve of Kevin Kiermaier in a Dodgers uniform.
Yeah. And it might make sense. These teams have obviously traded together a handful of times in the past. And yeah, you mentioned Cleveland there. They picked up Lane Thomas, but Lane Thomas grades out as a, for this year, a below average corner outfielder. He has played some center in the past, but not a lot. And Washington's been keen to move him to the corner. So probably not a solution there for Cleveland necessarily. Outside of, oh, I guess one more for you on the Jays. And you and I think kicked this around on Twitter a little bit, but when we look at even the small stuff, right? Like a Trevor Richards or a Kevin Kiermaier, and Kiermaier, they're eating down some money or whatever. How relevant do you think it is to how this team builds 2025 that they duck below that competitive balance tax line?
I think it's a bonus if you can. Like, I don't think they'll make a bad move just to do it. But I do think I think we're all learning these kind of new CBAs and new, you know, it's even in, you know, even to take, I know you love the cross sport comparisons, but like basketball, we're learning like how leery teams are of this second apron. And I think like avoiding the CBT when you can, it's the same thing we see in the NBA, right? Like when teams can duck under the luxury tax, when they know it's not the year to go for it, they will if they can. Right? They won't force it. They won't extend themselves to make a move that makes them worse off. But if it fits, then I think it doesn't. So I think they've done some tidy bits of business. I haven't looked at the numbers. Like, are they close now? Are they under? Or do they need to make a couple more?
So, I mean, we have imperfect information. We don't know how much they ate on Justin Turner. There are some of those assumptions and things like that that we can't. But my read on it is they're close and they can get there. Like, I don't think it would be a huge thing. And then, you know, I actually thought for a minute, given the quality of the Kikuchi return, maybe they were eating some money on that. And, you know, because that's the other argument, right? It's like you'd like to duck below the CBT. It affects your 2025 ability to spend and compensation picks and things like that. But also, if you're a big market team and you're selling, use that financial might. They didn't have to do that in the Kikuchi trade. What do you like about Jake Bloss? I know you have a thread coming on him at some point, so I don't want to give too much away, but do you like what the Jays got in Bloss?
I do, man. Like, I watched pretty much all his pitches at the major league level. I know he hasn't had success so far in limited time, but I watched a ton of minor league video too. And to be honest, like, I just like his feel for pitching. I like watching pitchers who, when they throw a fastball, they seem to know where it's going, and he seems to know where his fastball is going. There's some uniqueness. The uniqueness is like the low arm slot, extension, high spin fastball. That's kind of in vogue right now for a lot of different reasons. Yeah, exactly. And like, there's two big areas of opportunity, which I've already seen people write about and talk about, is he doesn't really have a changeup or an off-speed pitch. And already, like, just in low, in a small sample, you can see like his release points are very wide. Like, he'll get up on top to throw the curveball. He'll dip down to throw his other pitches. I wouldn't be surprised, just knowing the Jays and seeing what they've done with other pitchers, if, you know, some time is spent at the lab in Dunedin and just tightening those up. One thing about the lack of a changeup, talk to a few different people within the industry, and like, one of the things they say is like, guys who are really good at spinning the ball, and that's, you know, a couple different breaking balls, and essentially that's getting on the outside of the ball when you're releasing it. Guys who are really good at doing that, it's not uncommon for them to struggle getting to the other side of the ball, getting to the inside of the ball to throw an off-speed pitch, to throw a changeup. So he might just be a guy who doesn't necessarily have a great changeup. The first thing that leads us to is like, will you struggle against lefties? Will you struggle in platoon? But there are guys who get away with throwing three different breaking balls and still having success. The name that stood out to me as a comp, and I know his ceiling is like a 3-4-5 guy. The name that stands out to me is Mitch Keller. So a guy, kind of similar deal. Still doesn't throw his changeup a lot. Three different kind of cutter, slider, curveball, like a guy who can spin it and just figured it out. He figured it out a little bit later, not overwhelming stuff, but has a feel for pitching. And that's kind of a comp. Like, that's like obviously a 95% bell curve, like a really good outcome for Bloss. But like I said, like, I really like, from watching his video, his feel for pitching. And even in small samples, like, we talk about stuff plus a lot. The other aspect of Eno's modeling that he does is location plus. And Blosses is really good already. So, like, he knows how to command his pitches. You know, a guy who left this week, Nate Pearson, like, he didn't know where his fastball was going. And we knew it watching him, right? And he had some success, had some limited success in small samples of, like, just overpowering people and leaning on spin. But, you know, I like a guy who can locate that fastball, and Bloss seems to be one of those guys.
Yeah, the other thing to note there on the changeup and the ability to put spin on the ball is sometimes we do see guys like that instead try a splitter eventually, because that is a more spin-oriented. Obviously, you got to have the big hands and you got to have a good feel for that. But, you know, Bowden Francis has told me, yeah, I tried to work on a changeup for a long time, couldn't get it, went through a couple splitter grips, tried out Nate Pearson, a guy who spins the curveball fairly well. And, you know, maybe the Cubs have him add that splitter back in. The starting pitching market. Trevor Rogers is going from the Miami Marlins to the Baltimore Orioles. So the Orioles add another starting pitcher, this per Ken Rosenthal. We don't know the return yet, but the O'Connor Norby is a part of the return per Robert Murray. So the highest we've seen the Orioles move a prospect there. Trevor Rogers going back in, 4.53 ERA, but another guy who can give them some innings to get them to the playoffs and then maybe transition to a bullpen role. Chris, won't ask you about that one. There were two games yesterday. I do want to take a minute to talk about the absolute heater of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s on, assuming we don't get breaking news in the last 4.5 minutes of this show. What are you seeing from Vlad? I know that we talk about it all the time, but he's the team's most important player. They go as he goes. And we haven't seen him like this since the first half of 2021.
Yeah. At the end of last year, I wrote a thread about Guerrero, and it was pretty simple. It's most people thought he needed to pull the ball in the air more. Most people thought he needed, that's how his production would get back to where it was. I had the opposite view. I thought when you looked at the numbers, Vladdy's production cratered in terms of balls in play to center field and right field. And I think that was from chasing power. I feel that was chasing home runs. And I think that was a little bit of like how strong he was coming into the difference in how strong he was coming into 2021 versus 22 and 23. I think you can fake. I think you can, you can still have power to the pull side with some bad mechanics, with not being at your strongest. I don't think you can fake power to center and right field, but Vladimir Guerrero is one of those few people in the world who has power to all fields. And what we've seen in the last, 6 weeks or so is the power coming back to center field and right field. And the numbers would tell you that, our eyes would tell us that. Like, it almost seems like I can't remember what the line is in the Matrix, but like there's a line where Fishburne says something like he's starting to believe. Like those swings in Baltimore to me were like, oh, he's realizing he doesn't even need to pull the ball. Like, it's like he can do damage in that right center field spot. And like what we're all forgetting, because the year didn't go well last year for him, is like those dimensions at Rogers Center are absolutely built for Vladimir Guerrero. Like, if he has this swing for the next 5 or 6 years, his power numbers will be crazy. I think he went through like a weird phase chasing some power, but this is as close to 2021 as he's ever been. And this might be 2021. Like, we just haven't seen over a full year yet, but he is like fully, like, those swings yesterday were just beautiful.
Yeah, it was all. I mean, that was I think the highest and the furthest outside ball he's ever hit for a home run or something like that. And like, yeah, almost no one does that. It's ridiculous. It's so fun to see him this hot. Chris, know you're away from us for a little bit for the NBO. So good luck with that. And thanks for taking the time out today, buddy.
Congratulations on 4 hours of TV/radio.
Yeah, now I take a quick break and then I'm back on Blue Jay Central. So we'll get it done. And got some basketball in there this morning. Chris Black, producer at Sportsnet, at Down to Black on Twitter. Some good threads around the trade deadline and Vlad's heater. Also, he'll have one coming on new Blue Jays pitching prospect Jake Bloss. So no Jays news during the show today. A couple of those smaller deals that we mentioned earlier, Mark Leiter Jr. going to the Yankees for a couple prospects to help their bullpen. Connor Norby, probably the highest, we'll say, I don't know where DL Hall ranked versus Connor Norby, but a notable prospect that the Orioles are trading away to the Marlins for a left-handed starter, Trevor Rogers. So things starting to pick back up here ahead of the 6 p.m. deadline. We're going to wrap up in a moment here. Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert will have you from 2 to 4, and then Blair and Barker will be with you to take you through the actual trade deadline. It's at 6 o'clock. Stuff will probably trickle in a little past 6 o'clock. I'll be on Blue Jay Central later with Jamie and Caleb to continue to break this stuff down, take a look at the prospects. 5 players outbound so far, 11 prospects inbound, including a couple who Baseball America say will rank in the top 15 in the Blue Jays organization. So again, nobody wanted to be here. Nobody entered this season thinking about how cool it would be for the Blue Jays to be sellers and retool the farm system at the trade deadline. But that's where they find themselves. And so far, so good. Didn't want to be here, making the most of this. There's also a game tonight, 6:35. Chris Bassitt will take on Corbin Burns. And then we're back tomorrow, 10 to 12, and it's a 12:35 game where we don't know who this is going to start for the Jays. Probably a Paolo Espino type just called up from the minors to eat some innings. That's the point of this season that we're in. But who knows? Maybe some more trades before then. We're done for the day. Thanks for kicking around with us. Thanks to all 9 guests we had on, to Daniele, Amit, Austin, and Jennifer behind the glass. A lot of work going into this one. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of the trade deadline. We will talk to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow.